Health and Human Services Conference Committee will come to order. Today we expect to go through the spreadsheet for the Department of Human Services. The rest of the spreadsheet is not, comparison is not completed yet, so we'll do that at a future meeting. And we expect to take a little bit of testimony or questions about the Department of Human Services agency reduction. And we hope to hear a little bit about the Department of Health and Human Services newly authorized program for state and tribal out-of-home placement funding. So with that, we'll start going through the spreadsheet, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, members, Mr. Walls and I will be going through the spreadsheet, trading off from time to time. As Madam Chair mentioned, the spreadsheet that we'll be reviewing today just includes change items to the Department of Human Services. We'll have an additional spreadsheet which shows change items to the other agencies under the jurisdiction of the Conference Committee tomorrow. Just to give you a quick orientation of the spreadsheet, the first page is a summary page. On the first column to the left shows the agencies, and then subsequently after this page will show the change items. The next column is the governor's recommendations. The next column to the right is the House, and the column to the far right is the Senate positions. Then just to begin on line 3 of the spreadsheet, that's the general fund line. You can see here that the governor in 10 and 11 has a reduction to this area by $1.072 billion. The House has a reduction of $502 million. This includes $104.3 million of federal stabilization funding for a net cut to the general fund of around $398 million in 10 and 11. And then the Senate has a reduction of $719.2 million in 10 and 11, which includes $112.9 million of stabilization funding for a net cut of $606.3 million. Then you'll see below on line 13 and then on line – oh, I'm sorry. And, Madam Chair, members, also point out the tails differences. On line – going back to line 2 – or, sorry, 3 is the governor's tail reduction of – in 12-13 of $1.1 million. The House has a tails reduction of $618.8 million, and the Senate's tail reduction is $938.3 million. Then moving down to lines 13 and 20 are summaries of the health care access fund balance. The Senate, the governor merges the health care access fund. It no longer exists. The House has a balance at the end of 13 of $53 million, and the Senate has a balance at the end of 13 of $90.3 million. Then the on line 20 is a summary of the federal TANF balance. The governor leaves no balance in fiscal year 13. The House has zero balance as well in fiscal year 13, and the Senate leaves $1.6 million in fiscal year 13. Then you'll see a summary of the agencies. I won't go through that detail. Going then to page 2, line 80, is the first of the change items for the Department of Human Services. The first item is a reduction to the General Fund Administrative Operations Base of DHS. The governor had recommended a change of $12 million in 10 and 11. The House has accepted the governor's position, a reduction of $12 million. The Senate has a reduction of $17 million in 10 and 11. And also a difference between the Senate and the other two positions is that that reduction comes exclusively from the Central Office General Fund budget. On line 91 is a Senate item of savings of $320,000 one time in fiscal year 11 for DHS lease cost reductions. On line 97 is a Senate position for a $6.1 million transfer from the Health Match Systems account to the general fund. On line 104 is the Children's and Economic Assistance Management Federal Stabilization Funding. This is one of the spots where the Senate spends its federal stabilization money. Here it's $33 million in fiscal year 10. On line 111 is the State Operated Services Federal Stabilization Funding item for the Senate. Here the Senate is spending $79.9 million of its stabilization money in lieu of general fund money in fiscal year 10, in the amount of $79.69 million. On line 120 is the governor's recommendation to align background studies fees. The House accepted this position. It has zero net costs, and the Senate did not accept this item. On line 126 is the restructure license funding proposal by the governor. The House accepted this item, $2.1 million in savings in 10 and 11. The Senate has not included that proposal. Then on page 3, line 137, is the governor's proposal to merge the health care access fund into the general fund. Neither the House nor the Senate accepted this item. On line 147 is to combine the emergency general assistance, emergency Minnesota supplemental assistance item. The House has accepted this proposal from the governor. The Senate has not. On line 153 is the governor's proposal to modify 20% income withholding for child support. Small cost in fiscal year 10 and 11 of $289,000. The House has accepted this item. The Senate has not. On line 159 is the limit retroactive eligibility for the child care assistance program. It's a governor's proposal. Both the House and the Senate have accepted this item for savings of $304,000 in 10 and 11. On line 166 is a proposal from the governor for diversionary work program changes. The House has accepted this item, $55,000 worth of savings. The Senate has not included that proposal in its bill. On line 173 is overpayment alignment strategy, a small spending item proposed by the governor. The House has accepted this proposal. The Senate has not. On line 178 is a proposal for fraud prevention investigation activities. The House has done a variant of this, saves a net of $283,000 in 10 and 11. This provides for FTEs at DHS to concentrate its fraud enforcement activities on counties that have an undercapacity for fraud prevention. The Senate has a similar proposal. It saves $710,000 in 10 and 11. On line 191 is the governor's proposal for revenue recapture appeals. Both the House and the Senate have accepted this item for small savings in 10 and 11 to $27,000. Then on page 4, line 198, is the governor's proposal to invest in early learning. The House has adopted partial provisions of this recommendation for spending of $1.2 million in 10 and 11. The Senate also has some funding for quality assurance activities and child care, but these were made through the federal stabilization funding and is not included here as a general fund cost. On line 209 is a Senate position to accelerate federal spending and child care development fund. Here we have a savings for the Senate in fiscal year 10 of $5.2 million to the general fund. In 10 and 11, the House has actual additional spending of $4 million from this account in 10 and 11. Then on line 219 is the governor's recommendation for adjustment to the adoption assistance relative custody assistance funding program. Here the House has adopted the governor's proposal in its entirety for spending of $7.7 million in 10 and 11, and in the tails, $19.1 million. The Senate has only done the governor's rec for the first biennium, spending of $7.7 million there and zero cost in the tails. On line 227 is the governor's recommendation for a child permanency North Star Care foster care initiative. Neither the Senate nor the House has included this item in its bills. On line 236 is the Protecting Children Act. This is policy that's not included in the Senate position, and I'm not sure if the language is included in the House position. On line 246, recover targeted case management temporary payment. This is a governor's recommendation. Both the House and the Senate have adopted this with savings of $32.6 million in 10 and 11. On line 251 is a proposal from the governor for group residential housing modifications, and both the Senate and the House have adopted this item, saves $23.4 million in 10 and 11. Then turning to page 5, line 261 is child care assistance program reductions proposed by the governor. Neither the House nor the Senate has included this item. On line 271 is the MFIB child care increases. These are House spending items, appear to be out of the dedicated fund. It's $5.1 million of new spending in 10 and 11. On line 277 is another House item for basic sliding fee increases. This spends $17.6 million in 10 and 11, and then $750,000 in 12, 13. On line 289 are child care development increases. These are items out of dedicated funding for spending of $2 million in 10 and 11, and nothing in the tails for this item. On line 297 is a Senate position for using the CCDF federal stimulus funds for increased caseloads in infant child care in the general fund. This has one-time savings to the general fund in 10 and 11 of $22.6 million. Then on line 305 is a Senate proposal for TANF refinancing for MFIB general fund spending that we'll see later on in the spreadsheet. This saves the general fund $29.0 million in 10-11 and 4.6 in the tails. On line 314 are governor recommendations for MFIB reductions. The House has accepted some of these. Specifically on line 319, the House has accepted the $70 SSI penalty and then also a $100 housing penalty. And that saves the TANF account $6.9 million in 10 and 11 and $277,000 in the general fund. Oh, and then I'm sorry. Also, there are some additional changes to MFIB that the House has accepted, the MFIB asset limit, and there's also a small change to the spending in MFIB child care assistance grants. Those are found on page 6. On line 326, page 6, is the work participation cash benefit change proposed by the governor. This, both the House and the Senate have adopted, saves $1.8 million in 10 and 11. On line 339 is supported work grant proposal from the Senate. This spends $5.1 million in TANF funding for a continuation of the supported work program that is currently supposed to sunset at the end of fiscal year 10. Then on line 348 is another Senate position for a moratorium on the 60-month limit to MFIB. This spends $27.9 million in general fund dollars in 10 and 11, saves $11.2 million in 10 and 11 from the TANF fund. And the general fund cost is paid for by the TANF refinancing that we just went over on page 5. And so that covers that additional general fund cost here. Then on line 358 is the MFIB caregiver work requirement modification. This allows mothers of newborns to be exempt from the work requirement from 12 weeks to 12 months. This saves the general fund $2.1 million in 10 and 11, and the small cost of TANF is $78,000 in 10 and 11. On line 367 is a modification of the MFIB Family Stabilization and Work Program. This costs the general fund $1.1 million in 10 and 11 and $1.4 in the tails. This is also paid for out of the TANF refinancing earlier discussed, and also some small savings to the TANF fund in 10 and 11. Then on line 367 is the governor's proposal for eliminating integrated services funding. House has accepted this item for a savings of $3.75 million in 10 and 11. On line 382 is another governor's recommendation for a reduction to MFIB consolidated funds. The House has also adopted this position, saves $5.5 million in 10 and 11. The Senate has not accepted that item. Then turning to page 7, line 388 is TANF refinancing. Here you'll see the governor has refinanced $72.8 million in 10 and 11. The House refinances $17.1 million from TANF in 10 and 11. The Senate here is actually their item just relates to line 393, which is recognition of $27.5 million in new TANF funds available through the federal stimulus package. Then going down to line 408.
Madam Chair.
Representative Thiessen.
Can you go back to 358? Just exactly how it's only cost, how the cost is 78, but you're getting savings of.
Yes, Madam Chair, members, Representative Thiessen. The cost savings here, if you look actually on the detail below, on line 361, you see increase in MFIB DWP grants. That's the amount that the individuals who stay on MFIB longer will receive because of the work exemption. Then on the next line, 371, that's the savings in the MFIB Child Care Assistance Program. And I'm sorry. 362. I'm sorry. I got off to the wrong track. There are a different item. That's a savings of $2.5 million, 10 and 11, to the child care fund because of the child care that is not expected to be used as these individuals stay at home for an additional period of time. And as it turns out, the child care is actually more expensive than the actual grant itself. Therefore, you have general fund savings.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, then returning to page 7, line 408, are some small changes recommended by the governor to correct base level adjustments. Both the House and the Senate have accepted this item. It has costs in the general fund of $388,000, savings to the TANF fund of $100,000. Then on line 418 are some ARM provisions. I'm not sure what these items are, but they, for the House, it appears that they have to do with the MSA Sheltered Needy program, and it has spending of $217,000 in 10 and 11. On line 428 is the elimination of certain Children's Family Services grants. This governor proposal, neither the House nor the Senate has adopted this item. On line 435 is the CCAP, or Child Care Assistance Program, federal and proper payment limits item. This is new spending of $120,000. The Senate has accepted this item, and the House has not. On line 441 is a FSET revenue enhancement. This is the some changes to draw down additional federal funds for food stamp employment training activities the state already undertakes. The House has savings here of $5.2 million. The Senate has savings of $8.3 million. And the tails numbers are off, actually, also a little bit, $7 million in 1213 for the House and 8.6 for the Senate. Then, Madam Chair, members, turning to page 8, line 449 is a temporary reduction to state community action grants. This is the governor's recommendation. The House has adopted this item. Savings of $3.5 million in 10 and 11. The Senate does this 1 year for savings of $1.9 million. On line 455 is a House position.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. We're just going very quickly here. Can we go back to that FSET revenue enhancement and get a little explanation of why the Senate and the House numbers are different?
Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, I can explain the House position. I mean, the Senate position, and maybe we can get some help on what the House does here. The Senate had a separate bill earlier that was heard earlier in the session, which sought to find other sources of state funding that could be tapped for FSET revenue match. When we combined that bill or that idea with the governor's proposal, we ended up with a higher number of $8.4 million in 10 and 11 than what the governor had, the $7.7 million. In the tails, it turned out that combined approach would not save as much money as the governor's position. And so for the tails, the Senate has adopted the governor's approach to drawing down the FSET revenue. And the difference has to do with the fact that the Senate approach called for some or needed some additional FTEs to actually to get the new revenue.
What were you doing to get the new revenue?
It's a combined approach. I'm not sure I would need help from Senate counsel to describe the actual policy.
Madam Chair,
Ms. White,
The Family Stabilization Services was the separate bill, and actually the House does have that bill language in their MFIP article. I'm not sure. And the other part was the FSET revenue recapture proposed by the governor.
So maybe if there are other questions when we go through the side-by-side, or you can...
My only question is, so you're doing something with FTEs for 2 years, and then you're getting rid of the FTEs in the next biennium. So you're kind of getting... You're doing something for 2 years, and then you're getting rid of it because it actually costs more money?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, that's my understanding, yes.
Okay. It would be helpful to get kind of more detail about that.
Madam Chair, members, I can get the fiscal note, too, that shows that. Then, Madam Chair, members, back to page 8, line 455 is a House appropriation for homeless and runaway youth of $238,000 of general fund money. The Senate also funds the homeless and runaway youth, but, however, it's done through the federal stabilization funding and is shown on a separate spreadsheet. That funding is $2.5 million of that federal dedicated revenue in 10 and 11. On line 461 is a House appropriation of $275,000 in fiscal year 10 for food shelf programs. And then on line 467 is supportive housing appropriation of $3 million in 10 and 11. And the Senate has something similar to this, also done at $3 million through the federal stabilization funding. It's not shown on the spreadsheet. And we'll try to integrate those federal stabilization dollars that the Senate is spending on the spreadsheet in the future, just so you can see that comparison.
And can I just ask a question about that, Madam Chair?
Representative Thiessen.
That's still within the purview of this committee, though? Okay.
Those are, Representative Thiessen, those are stabilization funds that are available to the Department of Human Services, but they do need to be appropriated by the legislature. So we did appropriate them, and in some cases we appropriated them to certain programs, but my understanding is that there is more housing money available through the Stimulus Act, and so for those monies, we just are appropriating them to the department, and they would issue an RFP for proposals.
Okay, and Madam Chair, that's not in a separate bill, though.
No, it's not in a separate bill. We just showed it on a separate spreadsheet. Okay. So that when we presented it to the Senate Finance Committee and the people, the members on the floor, they wouldn't get confused between general fund spending and stimulus spending.
Thank you.
And, Madam Chair, on line 473, page 8, is TANF emergency funds. These are stabilization funds to be spent one time for emergency assistance. The governor has recommended spending $16 million on this activity, and then it's offset by the federal revenue for no net cost. The House has adopted the governor's funding level at $16 million, and the Senate has increased amount of $25 million here for fiscal year 10 for this item. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to Mr. Walls.
Mr. Walls?
Madam Chair and members, continuing on line 481, the House, Senate, and Governor all have a similar provision for modifying the nursing facility level of care thresholds. The difference you see in the numbers is primarily due to a different effective date in the House provision. Madam Chair, moving down to 495, there were three different approaches to PCA redesign and provider standards. And the numbers reflect the differences in language. I believe that we'll probably be walked through the differences when we get to the side-by-side language proposal. On line 518, page 9, the House has $350,000 for a county MOE task force, and this would be, I believe, to discuss how changes could be made to the county MOE payments for mental health into the future. Madam Chair and members,
Madam Chair, it's a little bit different than that, but we can talk about
it. Madam Chair, continuing on line 523, there are three proposals from the governor's budget that were adopted by both bills, so we are identical in federal compliance for HCBS waivers, for limiting disabilities waiver growth, and for limiting customized living service rates. The Senate has a proposal on line 556 for transitional consultation for persons entering housing with services that saves $1.4 million in the 10-11 biennium. And at the bottom of the page, we have nursing facility return to community initiative that saves just short of $500,000 in the 10-11 biennium. Moving to the next page, again, there are two Senate-only proposals. An alternative care payment limits for low-needs recipients saves $3.1 million in 10 and 11. An elderly waiver payment limits for low-needs recipients saves $772,000 in the 10-11 biennium. Moving on to nursing facility rebasing issues, on line 588, the House suspends nursing facility rebasing but does not do that until the 12 and 13 fiscal years. The Senate and the governor are identical on eliminating nursing facility rebasing. Line 600, we have a Senate-only provision, a 5% reduction of adult foster care rates for providers above the 95th percentile, saves $4.3 million in 10 and 11. The House and Senate have an identical provision for the nursing home moratorium exception extension, saves $1.6 billion in the forthcoming biennium. The Senate delays the APS nursing facility COLA, it looks like in the 12 and 13 biennium, with a savings of $17.5 million. There is also Senate-only provisions for reducing rates to higher reimbursed nursing facilities, saves 6.5 in 10 and 11, and increasing the nursing facility surcharge by $350 increases revenue, a net increase in revenue of about $16.8 million in the 10-11 biennium. There is a slight difference on page 11 of reducing the long-term provider rates. The House had an amendment to add additional savings somewhere else in the bill and reduce the reduction to long-term care providers from 3% to 2.58%, and you see the difference in the numbers in the House column. The Senate and the governor are at a 3% reduction. On line 642, the House and governor have the same change for MA single bed policy. The numbers are slightly different on the Senate side. I'm not sure the reduction. Mr. Godfrey looks like he wants to comment on that.
Madam Chair, members, the difference here is the related to an interaction with the item that's that will be seen in a moment. It's the rate reduction to nursing facilities who are at the higher reimbursed levels.
Madam Chair, continuing on line 647, all the Governor, House, and Senate are identical for simplify planned closure rate adjustment and nursing facility intergovernmental transfers. On line 658, the House has a provision to remove the Medicare influence from nursing facility rebasing, saving roughly $2 million in the 10-11 biennium. On line 663, nursing facility pension cost, the Senate is carrying a small expenditure to cover that item. The House had a provision offered on the House floor that was revenue neutral. It pays for the pension costs with a reduction in aging and adult services grants, and you see the trade of funds out through 12 and 13, and the language restores the base of the reduction in aging and adult services grants in years 2014 and beyond. On line 669, the governor had suggested eliminating some grants to save $1.8 million in the biennium. The House included the elimination of the epilepsy demonstration grant and the delay of awarding additional community support and development grants. The Senate included the delay for the community and support development grants, but chose to also include the elimination of Region 10 quality assurance. Moving down to line 678, the House supplants on a one-time basis $500,000 in senior nutrition funding with additional federal funds from the stimulus bill. These funds of $1.5 could be used to supplement or supplant state funding, and the House chose to supplant $500,000 in funding. It appears
Mr.
the Senate
Godfrey has a comment at
this point. Madam Chair, members, on that same item for the Senate, there's actually a spreadsheet error here. In fiscal year 12, the Senate would not have additional funding here. We attempted to do a shift or a payment delay. However, that's really not possible given the kind of structure of this funding. So our item would actually be similar to what the House has with just savings in fiscal year 11.
Madam Chair, continuing on page 12, for children's mental health residential treatment, the House has identical provision as was included in the governor's bill. The Senate includes the delay of implementation of treatment foster care but does not include the other provisions suggested by the governor. On line 700, reform method for CD providers rate freeze, the House language is identical to the governor. The Senate includes the extending the freeze until June 30th of 2013, and the transfer from the Administrative Special Revenue Fund, but does not include a reduction of chemical dependency incentives. On line 716, there's an item for decreasing county chemical dependency share for federal FMAP compliance. This was an item brought forth by the department stating that We would need to buy down sort of a peculiarity due to increased federal FMAP and the formula in statute. It would require an additional county share for chemical dependency, which would it would remove us from qualifying for the additional FMAP increase to 62% for Medicaid. And so the state needs to buy down that additional requirement on the counties to keep them from having to absorb additional expenditures, and that is about $1 million for the 10-11 biennium.
Madam Chair, can we just go back up to line?
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. Up to line 703. And what the difference is there in the out, mostly in the out second biennium?
Representative Thiessen, the way the Senate handled this item was the governor freezes for the first biennium, and then he does a different cut in the after that. We didn't do that cut. We just kept the freeze in place. We would allow them to restructure their rates, but it would be done within the amount of the freeze. We really felt that decreasing chemical dependency appropriations by that level would be very detrimental to our provider network.
Well, and Madam Chair, but you're saving more money.
On this item we are, but it's because if you took the governor's item, the freeze doesn't continue. We continued the freeze, but we didn't do the other cut. The other cut was a larger cut.
It, and Madam Chair, does that show up on, under that item 85? Or is there another cut?
I think if you look on line 707, you see a reduction called CD incentive.
Right.
We didn't take that line.
No, and I guess my question, Madam Chair, is, but the total savings in that biennium in the House and the governor's is about $10 million. Savings in the Senate is $17 million. So I'm just wondering how the cut is less in the governor's or the House proposal than in the Senate. I just must be missing something.
Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, I'm sorry, I was a little distracted, but are you wondering about the tails in 1213?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. The difference here is just the additional value of the freeze that will be a four-year freeze under the Senate position. You would, whereas the governor's proposal in the House is just a two-year freeze, my understanding. And there's always a payment lag also. So, for instance, you're on line 703. You'll see the House and the governor both have additional savings in fiscal year 12, even though those savings are accrued after the freeze has been lifted, and that's because you're still making payments on those years. For the freezed period in 10 and 11 in fiscal year 12, the Senate just continues the freeze at the forecasted level. Because the rates are increasing in the forecast, the amount being able to be saved in 12 and 13 are higher than they are in 10 and 11. And then there would be additional savings for the Senate in fiscal year 14 with that same lag effect. So it's really just a difference between the freeze being longer and the forecast rates being higher for this program area in the second biennium.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, I was just more kind of asking because the way that you phrased it indicated, and I'm thinking from the provider's perspective, that the Senate is actually cutting less than the governor in the House. And I'm just wondering how, from a provider's perspective, that's possible if the House is showing savings of $10 million in that out biennium and the Senate's showing savings of $17 million. I mean, from the provider, they're going to be getting less under the freeze than they would be under the House or governor's proposal. Am I getting that? I just want to make sure I understand the differences.
Madam Chair, members of the Senate, the Senate here is, and Representative Thiessen, the Senate is, as I said, freezing the rates through 13, and all of its savings is due to just the the rate.
My question is simpler. I just want to make sure I understood, because I was just a little confused by what Senator Berglund said. But just from sitting from a CD provider's perspective, 4 years from now, because the $17 million versus the $10 million in that binding means that less money is going to be going to CD providers under the Senate proposal than under the House proposal. That's what the numbers seem to show. I know there's differences in how we get there, but is that?
Madam Chair, members, yes. It's Representative Thiessen. The Senate does save $17.1 million out of the CD appropriation, whereas the House is 10.1. That's a net savings, however. You do have really the cuts, if you look on line 703 and then line 707, the amount of cuts that the CD providers here will be getting is, if you add those two numbers up, it's about $14.5 million.
Yeah.
And then you have additional spending of one time in fiscal year 13 of $4.1 million. So, not being clear on where that $4.1 million of new spending is going, the $14.5 million that you're cutting from the providers is less than the $17.1 that the Senate is cutting.
Okay. Thank you.
Continuing on line 722, the House has included the governor's proposal to delay new mental health services. The Senate has not included that proposal. That would save $5.2 million in 10-11. The Senate has a provision on line 730 to prohibit CTSS simultaneous treatment by multiple something, which saves $384,000 in fiscal 10 and 11.
Multiple providers.
Okay. That would be multiple providers, Madam Chair. On line 735.
Let me just, Madam Chair.
Representative Huntley.
The multiple providers, is this the anesthesiology?
No. Let's keep going.
Madam Chair, on line 735, the governor proposed eliminating three chemical dependency grants, which was picked up in neither the House or Senate bill. All three are identical for federal compliance with Paris implementation. The House has a small expenditure on line 754 for MMIS costs of uniform formulary exception development. The three proposals are identical for federal Medicare changes and federal compliance with reasonable limits, and all three are also identical for IEP funding on line 775, allowing the department to recoup a few more dollars in costs for services that they are providing to school districts. And I will turn it over to Mr. Godfrey to discuss health care provisions.
Before we leave this IEP funding issue, we need to just make note that this is a budget page also in the Education Conference Committee. And they have handled this differently than we have, so at some point, somewhere, somehow, somebody needs to figure out where it's going to be done.
Madam Chair, members, then returning the spreadsheet on line 781, page 13, is the governor's proposal for a basic care ratable reduction of 3%. The House has accepted this item but has excluded primary care services. The House is saving $82.5 million in 10 and 11 here. On line 793 is the Senate proposal for a basic care ratable reduction of 3%. This ratable reduction, however, excludes physicians, inpatient hospital, mental health, dental, and other providers, which are traditionally excluded from ratable reductions. And this saves $13.1 million in 10 and 11 and $3.1 million in the Healthcare Access Fund.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Who would that include then? Just an example.
Madam Chair, members, it includes chiropractic services, podiatrists.
Didn't you know I was asking?
Rehabilitative services. I have a list, Representative Abler.
This was an accident. Thank you. I'm fully informed for now.
Madam Chair.
How did I know?
Representative Thiessen.
Traditionally, in what sense?
Madam Chair, members, Representative Thiessen. Traditionally, in the sense, at least from the Senate perspective, and I think the governor has followed suit, and I think the House as well, that there are certain providers such as community health clinics and mental health clinics, and I think there's five or six providers that are traditionally excluded from rateable reductions.
So maybe an easier way to explain this to you, Representative Abler, is in the Senate, we didn't eliminate these services that the governor had eliminated. But we did think it was only fair that they take some rate reduction since other providers in the bill were also taking rate reductions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members, then returning to line 802 is a Senate position for a specialist physician rate reduction of 5%. Saves $21.2 million in 10 and 11 for the general fund and 6.2 in the health care access fund. Then, Madam Chair, members, on page 14, we have a series of governor's proposals that neither the House nor the Senate has adopted. Beginning on line 811 is the governor's proposal for elimination of health care eligibility for adults without children. Then on 828, eliminating Minnesota care eligibility for parents. Line 842, eliminating chiropractic service coverage. Line 852, eliminating dental coverage for adults. 863, eliminating podiatry service coverage. Page 15. Elimination of rehabilitative services. Line 884, maintain current Minnesota care premiums. And line 895, Minnesota care, eliminating Minnesota care rolling month and grace month policies. And none of those proposals were adopted by the House or the Senate. And then going to 904, page 15, is CHIPRA bonus requirements. I believe these are two items by in the House bill in 12 and 13, which establish presumptive eligibility and the express lane eligibility, two items which are necessary for the state to draw down additional CHIPRA funds by fiscal year 13. This spends $84.6 million in 12-13 and 53 from the general fund and $53.8 million in 12-13 from the healthcare access fund. Then on line 914 is another House proposal for
a simple. Excuse me, just a minute, Representative Abler.
So the Senate didn't choose to draw those funds down, is that right?
Or do they Representative Abler, I think one of the main differences in many of these provisions is that the House did not appear to have a tails target and the Senate did.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members.
But we are open to talking about this provision. It's in order for us to do it, we would have had to cut $80 million more out of our general fund tail.
Thank you.
And, Madam Chair, I understand you did some of this in the health care access fund for just Minnesota care.
Yes, we do have provisions in what was the other piece of that bill. We did the other piece. So we have both options still open to us.
Madam Chair, members, then returning to the spreadsheet is line 914 is a House item. Spending $1.6 million in 10 and 11 for the simplification and reform of the application process. And this is healthcare access fund spending. On line 924, and on continuing on to the next page, are a series of Senate positions for spending in the healthcare access fund. First item is delayed verification for Minnesota care. Spends $124,000 in fiscal year 10 and 11. Line 932 is some funding for Minnesota care eligibility for children over 275% of poverty. There aren't any program costs associated with this. However, there is some small administrative funding necessary, $5,000 in 10 and 11, you'll see here. Then on line 939 is the automatic eligibility for children leaving foster care age 18 or older. Has a cost of $187,000 in 10 and 11 and a cost of $4.3 million in 12-13. On line 947 is kind of a group of proposals to eliminate premiums, insurance barriers, other barriers for children under 200% of poverty, and to do automatic renewal for children in Minnesota care. This item spends $5.8 million in 10 and 11, and then $84.3 million in 12, 13, all out of the Healthcare Access Fund. Then on line 955, we have both the House and the Senate have items to eliminate Minnesota Care add-back depreciation for farmers. There's a slight difference in the cost here, and we're going to need to work with the department here to kind of figure out why that might be. But it spends $1.6 million in 10 and 11 in the House version and $4.1 in 12, 13, and similar amounts for the Senate.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, would these series of amendments or proposals that you have that use Healthcare Access Fund, it looks to me like most of those could be used for the CHIPRA spending?
Representative Huntley, we are certainly open to getting more information about that program, but our understanding is that some of these things need to be done in the General Fund MA program as well as in the Minnesota Care program. And that is where we would have had to come up with the $80 million in further tail savings in order to be able to afford the proposal. And I guess we felt at this stage of the game it was good to have both items on the table and to have further discussions about which approach would be the better approach. Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, members, returning to the spreadsheet on line 963 is the governor's proposal to increase MAEPD premiums. The House has adopted this position and it saves $518,000 in 10-11. The Senate has not included this provision. On line 970 is the elimination of additional 2 months of coverage for children transitioning from MA to Minnesota Care, this governor's proposal. Neither the House nor the Senate has included this provision. On line 979 is the elimination of patient incentive, healthy incentive grants. And this, both the governor's proposal, both the House and the Senate have adopted for savings of $982,000 in general fund in 10 and 11. Turning to page 17, line 985 is the healthcare program simplification proposal from the governor, which neither the House nor the Senate has included here. On line 1002 is the governor's proposal to align the Minnesota Care withhold. The House has not adopted this item. The Senate has adopted this item and it has much more significant savings in the Healthcare Access Fund than the governor, $20.5 million specifically in 10 and 11. And the reason for the difference is just simply that there are more people now. Well, first of all, there are more people included in the Senate position and more services in Minnesota Care than the governor has proposed. Then on line 1011 is a Senate item to promote birthing centers. This saves $17.7 million in 10 and 11, $37.1 in 12, 13. On line 1018 is a MA blended rate for cesarean sections. This blends the complicated vaginal delivery rate and the uncomplicated C-section delivery rate for savings of $4.5 million in 10 and 11.
Madam Chair, just one clarification.
Representative Thiessen.
Back in the aligning the managed care withhold, the governor's and the Senate's language, they're doing the same thing. It's just that the governor eliminated a bunch of people from Minnesota Care. So the language is this. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members, returning to the spreadsheet, line 1027 is both the House and the Senate have an item for colorectal cancer prevention pilot project. What you see here is simply the MA costs for the program, and it's a pilot project, so it sunsets at the end of fiscal year 11. House has $28,000 in spending, the Senate $29,000.
And why are they different?
Madam Chair, I believe the difference is just in terms of fiscal note differences, and we'll have to, it's only off by 1,000. We'll have to check with the department on this one. Madam Chair, members, returning to line 1042, last line on page 17, is the change treatment of self-employment business assets in MA and Minnesota Care. This is both House and Senate proposal, which saves $130,000 in 10-11 and $5.6 million in 12-13. Turning to page 18, line 1050 is a Senate-only position for diagnostic imaging prior authorization. This saves $1.2 million in 10 and 11. On line 1061 is another Senate-only position to modify anesthesia coverage and rates. Saves $2.5 million in 10 and 11, $5.1 million in 12-13. On line 1067 is both the House and the Senate have a proposal for SMRT process modifications. Small costs in 10 and 11 at $291,000, savings of $1.1 million in 12-13. On line 1080 is a Senate-only position for patient-centered decision-making, saves $283,000 in 10 and 11. On line 1092 is a Senate-only position to carve out dental services from managed care, saves $21.5 million in 10 and 11 and $43.6 million. Those are numbers actually combined general fund and healthcare access fund savings. Also, I should note that this item needs to be repriced by the Department of Human Services, and once we have that, those numbers will be reflected in the spreadsheet at a later date. Then turning to page 19, line 1103 is a Senate-only position to put limits on dental services, saves $14.5 million in both the General Fund and the Healthcare Access Fund in 10 and 11 and $27.2 million in 12-13. On line 1112 is a House position, which also limits dental services, but I also believe it makes some changes to the Critical Access Dental Program, saves more money, $26.8 million between the House Healthcare Access Fund and the General Fund in 10 and 11 and $50.2 million in 12-13. On line 1126 is a House-only position for coverage for autism spectrum disorders and reduced TEFRA premiums. There's no net cost on this proposal. There is some savings to the MA and elderly and disabled part of the department's appropriation. Some additional spending on loss of revenue money on line 1130. On line 1133 is a reduced improper billing for emergency ambulance trips. This is a Senate position, save $727,000 in 10 and 11. On line 1144.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Probably not now, but later. I'm just interested in what kind of improper trips you found. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, returning to line 1140, both a House and a Senate position to reduce unnecessary ER visits with the managed care withhold. This is identical savings here of $1.2 million in 10 and 11. On line 1150 is a Senate-only position for an MA intensive medical therapy pilot project, saves $6,000 in 10 and 11. On line 1155 is a 1% inpatient hospital rateable reduction. This is a Senate-only position. It saves $11.3 million between the Healthcare Access Fund and General Fund. And just to note, the rateable reductions, the House and the governor also have rateable reductions for hospitals, 3% level, and that's included back in earlier rateable reduction entry on the spreadsheet. Then on page 20, line 1166 is the ALTER 2001 inpatient hospital rebasing proposal from the governor. House has not done this item. The Senate adopts this three-month delay and then additionally includes additional savings in fiscal year 12 to phase in rebasing beginning in fiscal year 12 at a reduced level for fiscal year 12 and then fully phases it in by fiscal year 13. That has additional tail savings for the Senate of $19.5 million in fiscal years 12-13. On line 1174 is a governor's proposal for a health care provider payment delay. It's not included by the House here. The Senate adopts this delay, but then also includes an additional delay in fiscal year 13 for some additional tail savings of $2.9 million. And then likewise on line 1183 is another delay, inpatient payment delay for hospitals, governor's recommendation. House has not included that in their bill, but in the Senate has adopted this item, but then additionally has another delay in fiscal year 13 for tail savings of $3.6 million in the second biennium.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Then in 2014, there would be another number showing up of a positive. Is that correct on this item?
Madam Chair, members, Representative Abler, that's correct. There would be 2014. There would be the cost of the delay in 14.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, returning to the spreadsheet, line 1192 is the elimination of critical access dental program. Governor's proposal that neither the House nor the Senate is included. Line 1201 is the federal compliance limit for Merck. The governor's proposal here, both the House and the Senate have adopted a variant of this, identical savings of $86.7 million in 10 and 11. Governor's savings are higher because he reduces in fiscal year 11 the MERC payments on a one-time basis. Explains the differences with his number. On line 1206 is the MA mental health inpatient ratable reduction. Governor's proposal, which the House has adopted for savings of $2.5 million in 10 and 11. Line 1214 is the reduction of pharmacy reimbursements. Governor's proposal, and the House and the Senate have adopted that. Identical savings of $2.4 million in 10 and 11.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Abler. I'm trying to not talk much, but I'm anyway.
That's
just to,
fine.
Okay, to that whole topic. It seems everybody likes that, but I'm just concerned about what will happen if we do that, having heard from some of the, I'm sure you've heard the same talk, so I'll just mention it and we can work our way through.
Well, I think there's a lot of things people are worried about in this spreadsheet, Representative Abler.
Well, Madam Chair, just to that point, it seems like if we do this, that some of them aren't going to serve the people anymore, and there'll be some rural pharmacies that don't want to do business with us, so I know you know that. Thank you.
Okay, let's go on.
Madam Chair, members, returning to the spreadsheet, page 21, line 1228, is a Senate-only position. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped one. Let's go back to page 20, last line. This is a Senate-only position to require collaborative consultation for ADH and psychotropic drugs. This saves, in fiscal year 10 and 11, $111,000. Then on page 21, line 1228, is a Senate-only proposal for e-prescribing initiative for prescription drug list adherence, and this saves $267,000 in 10 and 11. And line 1234 is a governor's recommendation for the elimination of the rural hospital inpatient DRG payments. It's not adopted by either the House or the Senate. And line 1241 is the elimination of the DSH inpatient quarterly payments. Neither the House nor the Senate has included this item. On line 1247 is the governor's proposal to eliminate the outreach incentive program, and neither the House nor the Senate included that as well. And with that, Madam Chair, members, I'll turn it back to Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair, continuing on line 1273, all three positions include provision for homestead estate recovery, which saves $2.9 million in the 10-11 biennium. The governor had a position to modify MA asset reduction to change the asset limits in MA that was included in the governor's provision, also in the Senate, was not included in the House. That saves $3.4 million in 10 and 11. Page 22, all three bills include the elimination of additional renewal notice mailings and the regulation of some trusts and transfers. The Senate includes a provision to refund of health plan reserves, public share. I believe this would be that we would draw down some of the health plan reserves by delaying payments made to providers in the GAMC program.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
I wasn't aware of this provision. Is this something like what we talked about in 07 that was controversial? Another version of it?
Representative Abler, it was discussed in 2008.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, continuing on line 1303, neither the House nor the Senate includes the governor's position on non-emergency medical transportation. The House does include the adjustment of special transportation rates for a saving of $39,000 in the 10-11 biennium. On line 1315, the Senate has a provision to save $4.8 million by eliminating the ATS broker, and also includes a provider rate enhancement.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Despite my best efforts, the House doesn't have much of a position on that topic. Does this include the county increased cost on the Senate side with the savings?
Representative Abler, this only eliminates the broker for the purposes of arranging the rides.
Okay. They still do the level of need.
It doesn't eliminate for the level of need.
Thank you.
And part of the savings then is paid in increased reimbursement.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, continuing on line 1323, the governor's proposal to restructure GAMC was not included by either the House or the Senate. On line 1332, The House includes a one-time replacement of general fund dollars in the amount of $104.3 million on the GAMC program. This is the federal fiscal stabilization pot of money. The Senate had similar provisions that were discussed just in a different program earlier in the bill. On the very last line of the page, 1341, the Senate includes the governor's provision for MINDO limits, which saves roughly $10 million in the 10-11 biennium. The House did not include this provision. The governor had a position on Minnesota sex offender and state-operated services pension reform that saved $4.2 million for the biennium. This was not included in either the House or Senate bill. All three proposals are identical on the state-operated services operating reduction, and the House also includes CABHS core safety net function proposal included by the governor on line 1316 that costs $506,000 in the 10-11 biennium. The Senate has a proposal on line 1366 to restructure Anoka Regional Treatment Center and MITO that saves 2.7 in 10 and 11. The House includes the
Madam Chair. Sorry,
we're just going
kind of faster. I met with the department on that restructuring of the Anoka Center. Is this the language that's I know there was a different proposal earlier. Is this the modified proposal that they're comfortable with? Up there with the labor side and the department, or is this the original proposal that you had?
Representative Abler, I'm not sure I understand your question, but maybe we could talk about it later.
Later is fine. Thank you.
Madam Chair, continuing on line 1372, the House includes dollars to support the state-operated services safety net dental clinics. That was suggested by the governor. The Senate does not include that provision. All three proposals include restoring growth and base funding to the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. That's on line 1378. It costs $12.6 million in the 10-11 biennium. On line 1384, the Senate has a provision to eliminate the sex offender appropriation for Department of Corrections treatment. That saves $1.673 million in 10 and 11.
And I think actually the title for this should be changed. It should be reduce, not eliminate.
And Madam Chair, the final provision in Health and Humans or in Department of Human Services is an IGT realignment. This is similar to a provision earlier in the bill, something that just a peculiarity that would increase local government costs due to the FMAP increase, and increases on local government are forbidden to receive the additional Medicaid percentage. And so this is some revenue being lost by the state that would come from the counties that would have been an increased burden on Hennepin County, and that is paid for by the state. The additional cost is paid for by the state in order to keep the additional roughly $1.8 billion of FMAP increase to our state due to the federal stimulus bill.
Okay, that completes the spreadsheet comparison that we have so far. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one final question. If we can revert back to line 620. I was going to ask a question, and we were on the fourth item past it by the time I got my question figured out. That's the surcharge. Is there a corresponding rate increase to make up for that? Sometimes you increase rates and then surcharge to make up for it. Is there one of those here?
Yes, it's handled the same way the existing surcharge is, and this increase is would bring us to the level the federal government would allow.
So it winds up affecting the private pay directly, but the others don't notice much difference. Is that right?
It's handled the same way that it is today.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
If you want me to get more
food. If not, we were going to have a little bit of a discussion about the Department of Human Services agency reduction.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate had some questions about the reduction. In terms of the allotment of the reduction between state-operated services, the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, and the central office. And one of the reasons that we had trouble understanding this is because in these line items for state-operated services and the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, you would be making reductions, but then there are other places in the governor's budget where he's requesting increases for staffing in those areas. And so to us, we didn't understand this, and so we needed to get some more information about it.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Jane Rankin. I'm the budget director at the Department of Human Services. And to answer your question, Madam Chair, there's two areas that I would talk about. First of all, to mention, remind members that when you are looking at the governor's budget, as much as possible, each individual change item tries to stand on its own. So it is its own reflection of costs and associated FTEs, similar to a fiscal note. That also is taken independent of other changes in the budget. That's hard to do in the Department of Human Services because our budget is so complex and there's a lot of interactions. But to the extent that you see a change page asking for an increase in FTEs, that's because when you look at that proposal, it would take additional work to get additional staff to get that work done. Having said that, when I originally presented the agency's page for reducing general administrative operations, I indicated, and I'll indicate again, that the intention is that this be an agency-wide reduction. We don't necessarily want to hold any one particular part of the agency harmless. One of the difficulties we ran into in putting our budget together into the budget system that is run by MMB, that all the agencies use, is that it was a very structured program we had to use, and we had to put the data in such a way that it automatically assigned a certain percentage to central office, SOS, and MSOP. That does not mean that is the intent of the agency to allocate the recommended reduction in proportion to that budget page. And that is something that I know I talked about last January, and I've talked individually to staff about to make sure that they understood that. We are at the agency. We are looking at what we will do, how we will deal with, implement an administrative reduction. At this point, we don't have a plan figured out. That is going to wait until we see the rest of the parameters of what's in the budget so that we know where you have indicated that you want us to do more work, where you've indicated that you're accepting reductions that mean that there would be less work or work that we no longer do. And to the extent possible, our hope is that we can get to the administrative reduction level that we end up with by managing into it, by holding vacancies open, by reducing non-salary costs, by attrition. layoffs would be our least favorite last place we'd probably go, but it's really too early to say. So when you look at the spreadsheet and you see under on the first page and the governor's recommendation columns an assigned reduction to it's not the first page, it's the first page of mine, page two, an assigned reduction to state operated services and to MSOP, that is not that does not reflect an agency plan. That's really, again, the artifact of how we put the budget together last January.
Well, Ms. Rankin, I still do not understand. If you have a line item here that says that you're reducing the Minnesota Sex Offender Program by a certain amount, and we pass it, I don't see how you have flexibility to not reduce that program by that amount.
Madam Chair, when we put our budget page together, we asked for the flexibility to manage this administrative reduction. We have general authority to transfer positions and non-salary money. It's a provision that the legislature has granted our agency over the years, and we would use that authority to do that. That's why if you looked at the governor's budget bill for Health and Human Services, you would not have seen a rider in the appropriations article that had anything to say about administrative reductions. It's because we feel that the other authority that you give us is the tool that we will use to manage the reduction that we end up with.
Well, let me ask this question differently then. The way you have tracked this, you're showing less of a loss of federal funding because state-operated services, unless the Senate proposal is adopted, doesn't receive much federal funding. But if you actually cut something else that does receive federal funding, then you would lose more federal funding. So,
Madam Chair, I see your point, and you are correct. It is true that the governor's recommended $12 million, that's a net general fund reduction that will mean a larger actual reduction at the agency because there is so much federal funding that comes to us.
Well, I don't know how anybody else feels about this, but I feel generally confused about what we're doing here. And I thought maybe we might get some enlightenment here today, but I don't feel like we are.
Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair. Sorry. It was a commendation. Anyway, well, let me just try to help or ask a couple questions. So did this spreadsheet come from the governor, or did the legislature write up how they thought you would split up these monies?
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, the governor's recommendation column is taken from the governor's budget documents. If you looked at the budget page or the tracking that the department produced, you would see the numbers reflected, same numbers reflected.
And thanks, and Madam Chair. So, but you don't feel like you're bound to these numbers? You can just kind of mix and match in your department to squish these numbers around, even though there's a name and a department tied to that? Is that what you're telling us?
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, I'm not sure that I would say that the department doesn't feel bound. I would say that we have currently, in the current biennium, we have authority from the legislature to move funding between positions. And there's a condition on it that we make quarterly reports back to the funding chairs so that the legislature is aware of what we're doing. And we also have to get approval by MMB before we do that. So there are parameters around that ability.
So, Madam Chair, I think it's kind of a target, and it's a placeholder for what they think they might do without a specific plan. Can I ask another question?
Representative Abler.
I think it might. I didn't spend much time looking at this line item, but I think it's helpful to know to members that to get a net 12, you have to cut about 15 or something, right?
I don't think
16 million because of the FFP that we lose. Is that right?
Well, Representative Abler, it depends where you're cutting what you lose.
But in the proposals that are before us, and then in the Senate version, where they do a deeper cut, you actually have to cut 28 to get to the net 11 because of the FFP. Is that
well,
right?
Representative Abler, because we didn't feel comfortable cutting state-operated services or the Minnesota Sex Offender Program when we're appropriating more money for them in other parts of the budget. We just felt like that was crazy. That didn't make any sense. We just made the cut to the central office.
Okay.
So that we could keep having this discussion.
I just have one more question. So if, Ms. Rankin, if the Senate proposal were adopted about your central office cuts, how long would it take to get a fiscal note for some proposal of ours? It's only half facetious, but I mean, that's something we're frustrated about. But it would even, you'd have to lose people across all those areas, right? That would be that department too.
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, we would prioritize keeping, you know, direct care services, for example, would be something that we would look carefully about, making sure that we could keep the staffing that we need to accomplish that. And we would look at other places in the agency to figure out how we would manage to reduction that the Senate is recommending. It would be significant, and I certainly there are positions in the agency, such as mine, for example, that is not directly related to providing any particular service to members of the public. So, you know, it's one of the things that I'm sure we would consider.
Madam Chair, there's supposed to be a little humor in that thing since we've been having a hard time with notes. But even the $12 million cut, which equals 16 or so, I can't imagine how you can cut that deeply and still function as you're supposed to. Do you think you could? And we would miss you, by the way, Ms. Rankin.
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, thank you for that thought. The governor's recommendation for the agency as far as administrative reductions is trying to balance, I would say, the need for the state to manage within the resources that it has given the current environment where the economy statewide is challenging. It would not be an easy thing for this agency to do, but it is something that we would do our best to, you know, prioritize and try to make the reductions and yet still be able to provide the services and function as best we can.
Thank you.
So, Representative Abler, my confusion, and I still feel confused about this, we have an item in the governor's budget, for example, for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program to buy back a cut that was made to the base last year. And the reason that request was made is they said that they would not then have to lay anybody off. But if you look at the general reduction and you look at that line item, it looks like they would be laying somebody off. So that's kind of the confusion that I have about this, and I certainly hope that I'm the only one who's confused, and later sometime when we have a private conversation, somebody will make this crystal clear to me.
Madam Chair, maybe just to help a bit, Dr. Sulik has spent some time with me chatting about stuff, and maybe with you as well. I think that the sex offender program must be a placeholder. I think at some point they can't lay more people off and keep it a credible program, and so I think that's what their concern is, and so I think that's part of the softness of the number on that part. And can I ask one more question of Ms. Rankin?
Representative Abler.
Thank you. Well, just based upon even the lower target of the governor's target, what amount of those positions would be layoffs? What position would be attrition? Would it be half layoffs?
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, I can't answer that question at this point because that's going to depend on the rest of the package that ends up to be our agency's budget. And I apologize.
I tried.
It's just
but it's nice you couldn't come.
Are there any other questions about this item? All right, well, then let's move on.
Thank you.
Yeah. We have this little handout. It says ACF, Administration for Children and Families, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And this is a appropriation, new funding that's being made available by the federal government. And it seemed like states are eligible to apply for it, and it seems like if somebody gets this money that they will possibly be able to offset other costs that they're bearing at state expense only. And so we wanted to have someone from the department come and talk about this a little bit so we can understand this better and possibly make sure we're using all resources we might have available to us to meet the obligations the state would have. Would you like to identify yourself for the record?
Yes, ma'am. My name is Maxie Rocky Moore. I am the supervisor of Family Support and Placement Services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and that's basically foster care and Title IV-B and Title IV-E and Indian Child Welfare and Minnesota Permanency Demonstration Projects and Children Justice Act grants for the Minnesota Department of Human Services.
And so can you tell us about this opportunity that we might have and whether the department intends to be applying for these funds and how these funds can be used?
Okay. On October 7th, 2008, the President signed the Fostering Connections to Success and Increasing Adoption Act, and that new law amends the Social Security Act to extend and expand adoption incentives through fiscal year 2013. And it creates an option to provide kinship, guardianship, assistant payments, create an option to extend eligibility for Title IV-E foster care, adoption assistance, and kinship, guardianship payments to age 21. D-links adoption assistance from aid to families with dependent children eligibility and provide federally recognized Indian tribes or consortia with the option to operate a Title IV-E program, among many other provisions. So to answer part of your question, what this act does is it allows tribes to apply for Title IV-E funds to provide foster care and adoption on their reservation within their population. And so therefore they don't have to have an agreement with the state if they don't choose to exercise that. They can have an agreement with the federal government and they can apply to have an agreement with the federal government directly. So that's basically the bulk of that act.
And is it only available to tribes to apply? Because it looked like the state could apply also.
Well, no, the state already, you know, with Title IV-E and the Social Security Act, we already have funds under our Title IV-E state plan. We already have those funds. Those funds are available for us to do foster care in the state of Minnesota and adoption. There are some parts of it which some of those provisions were set out in the North Star, in the North Star Care Act that we tried to put forward, I guess it's safe to say, and with our policy bill. And so some of those provisions we have to meet as a federal requirement. Given, I can't speak for what the direction of the department will be, but given the status of the North Star Act, I don't know what our next steps will be in terms of trying to realize and implement some of the provisions of the Guardian Assistance Act. So I don't know what we will do, but there is extended 4E reimbursement for some activities with this new legislation for states. It also allows tribes to apply for 4E directly and implement a Title 4E plan and Title 4E program directly. So depending on the outcome of our North Star and our other policy bill, we can't say exactly, I believe, what we're going to do next. Would you say that, Ann, pretty much?
Well, are the federal funds that would be available to the tribes funds that otherwise we would be providing to the tribes?
Those funds that would be available to the tribes, currently we have four tribes who have an agreement with the State Department of Human Services. Two of those tribes have the ability to provide foster care directly and adoption assistance directly to their population. They are using, and they do receive state funds to implement that project and to implement that program. Now, they have the option, tribes who already are doing and already have a state 4E agreement with the state have the option to continue that, or they can choose to go into a direct agreement with the federal government. We don't know exactly what those tribes will do, and so therefore we don't know what the financial impact may be to the state or what the financial savings may be to the state. As far as we know today, we don't have any tribes who have communicated with the department that they do plan to apply for the 4E grants and the 4E agreement directly to with the federal government. The federal government, through the Children's Bureau, has only provided direction and technical assistance directly to the tribes, and the department and states, in a sense, have not been a part of that process. So we don't know what tribes plan to do, and we therefore don't know what the possible impact would be on the state and non-state dollars at this time.
Well, this was called to my attention by a senator who represents a tribal area,
mm-hmm.
indicating that they did want to apply.
That a tribe did want to apply?
Yes, but that they were not getting very much assistance from the state.
Okay.
In that regard, so.
Okay. Here's my phone. They might want to apply, but in order for them to apply, that is, on some level, a nation-to-nation relationship. The tribe needs to apply and communicate directly with the federal government, and they can do that through the Region 5 regional office of the federal government, which is in Chicago. The state does not have a responsibility as a result of this act to provide general oversight to a tribe and instruction about how to apply for the Title 4E agreement. There are some pieces, like under the Chafee Act, where the state does have a responsibility to provide technical assistance for a tribe who wants to do and implement the Chafee piece of the legislation. That would be a reduction to the state Chafee funds that the state receives. And so, therefore, the state has to provide technical assistance on that piece, but not on the overall implementation of the Title 4E plan.
Okay, are there any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. So you were talking about the North Star proposal before and that there's some things missing to accommodate related to this stuff or just related to the federal. What were you? I didn't understand what you're talking about.
Okay. What I'm saying is what the Department of Human Services intended to do on some level was to implement some of the provisions of the fostering connections and adoptions assistance act with the North Star bill that we had proposed. However, I guess it's my understanding today that I guess I understand that that North Star will not be going forward. So that means if North Star will not be going forward, within the state, the department has to scramble again and figure out what parts of this new legislation can we implement and what kind of funds, 4E funds, can we maximize with that implementation. We were hoping that the North Star would pass because a lot of those provisions are in there. In our policy bill, there are assurances that every state has a guarantee to the federal government. And so in our policy bill, those portions are in the policy bill. And I understand, I hope that those portions are going forward. But what we intended to do was implement a kind of like a state model of the of this federal act with Fostering Connections, but I guess I understand that, unfortunately, Fostering Connections will not be moving forward. I guess, is that true? That's kind of what I figured.
Well, Madam Chair, the North Star piece in general was kind of it was a rate changing piece. I mean, it was changing rates, so reducing rates for some people, increasing rates for some people. Right. Is the stuff that you're talking about actually going to cost money if it just stood on its own? And the other question I guess I had, why don't you let it, because you didn't, I don't think as it was presented,
okay,
that piece was ever explained to anybody. It was really, the way the North Star was presented was simply, we're going to increase rates for adoption, decrease rates for foster care.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever kind of explained what you're saying right now.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, it is too bad. I mean, it's really too bad.
Yeah,
if what you're saying is that there's pieces in there maybe that don't even cost money, I don't know if they cost money, but it would be helpful if you could at least break out the pieces that you think you seem to need to do this separate from, and you don't have to do it right now, but to get it to us.
Well, all I'm just saying is from my standpoint of a supervisor of foster care, you had the opportunity to implement some of the most powerful changes in child welfare in the state of Minnesota. Now, the federal government is already ahead of you. That is why they came up with the act, the Fostering Connections Act, and that's why the president signed this bill. This bill calls for a sweeping child welfare foster care reform in the United States. Our version of that was the North Star care.
And I understand and that we were cutting rates for North Star, for foster care, which is your area.
Okay, exactly. We were balancing those rates out. And what that means is with Fostering Connection, what that allows is for states to have the opportunity to provide 4E reimbursement and 4E funds for relatives. What we attempted to do in North Star was to get rid of the gross disparity in the rates that a foster parent receives for taking care of a child and the rate that a relative receives for taking care of that child. So if anything, we were attempting to do what the federal government has already done with this act in creating a rate benefit and in a sense an equalization of those rates so that children could realize the same benefit, with financial benefit and resources and support whether they were with a relative or with a non-relative foster parent. That's what we attempted to do with fostering, with North Star Care, and unfortunately that did not happen.
Any other questions about this federal funding? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just I think we're kind of on the same page here, but Ms. Rockymore, just to understand, we didn't like the idea about taking from one to get to the other. The House committee was extremely not happy about that part. And so if there's something we can do that doesn't involve equalizing the rates, which the counties were concerned about their share ongoing and the fiscal note was unclear. So that part, we don't want to do that part, I don't think, speaking for at least the House side.
But, you know, I think it's – oh, I'm sorry. Can I interrupt you?
Yeah. Go ahead, yeah. I like you. Yeah, go.
I don't think it's fair to couch it or gauge it as taking from one and giving to the other. The focus should be what can we do that's best for this child? And is it fair in a system that we've had that for many years provides a greater benefit for a stranger taking care of a child as opposed to a relative taking care of the child. So if anything, we were trying to bring together an equity in how we provide services. And granted, I love our counties, and counties always are concerned about the cost that they realize and the cost in providing adequate funding for the services that they get through foster parents, which is good, and we love our foster parents. But also we have this need, and as a state, we should be willing to explore a new model to try to get a rate that is equalized for the care of basically the same child.
Madam Chair, let me just try one more time. But just to help you, Ms. Rockymore, we're not doing that.
Okay? I know, I see that.
But so is there something not part of the rate thing and that we can do to make this work out for non-tribes that we have responsibilities for that would help the counties? And is there some policy we can pass to access some of this little bit of money that's in here or whatever? That's the homework assignment.
The tribes are going to be able to apply for this funding directly.
And my impression is that this money is not, the state cannot apply for it separate from the tribes. The tribes can apply for this. I guess my interest in it was as to whether it would then replace funds that the state otherwise would provide to the tribes. But what we have heard is that since we don't know if they're going to apply or not,
yes,
mm-hmm. we can't count on having federal funds replace the state funds.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
You got a clear answer, Madam Chair. How about
right.
that?
Thank you.
So the conference committee will be meeting tomorrow at 1 p.m., and I think we will be going through the rest of the spreadsheet. It should be available by then, and some of the language comparison sections will be available for us to start going through those as well.
Madam Chair, just for planning purposes, do you have an idea what Saturday might look like?
I believe that we will be meeting on Saturday. I would say it's unclear at this point whether the full conference committee will be meeting on Sunday or not, but we do have a lot of work to do before next Thursday, and the only way we're going to get it done is by continuing to stay at it.
Madam Chair, just as one comment for you, I'll work way longer on Monday if I don't have to come on Sunday. Sunday is not a good day for me to come. So just for me personally, but I know you'll do good work.
Well, I can tell you we would not be meeting Sunday morning. It would be later in the afternoon or evening.
Yeah, she's going
to call her. With that, the meeting is adjourned.
No, but what if she wants to?
How do they put it on a spreadsheet? We're doing their access.
I do, but I have to make one phone call real quick.
Yeah. They don't have anything.
They'll take nurse therapy.
Yeah, you and I might be able to understand it.
Thank you.
Hey.
Yeah, I just talked to Katie and Joan. They said fruit tray and some trail mix or something.
I was telling Paul, I said, I got a bill on the floor.
I just copied cash in the spreadsheet. Katie's ready to pay.
Had a couple of meetings tomorrow.
Did I get the numbers in here right?
That's true.
Right. If they
can take
it. I'm not.
That's the end of the fiscal year. This is 12.
All your tracking.
You have 238 for the first biennium and then 119 each year for 12.
Oh, yeah, it's not on top. Right, added to the budget. That's not how it works.
I know.
It's not supposed to be. I got to start working on it first.
Yeah. No, it is. I've got it.